Coming up next is Empower Hour.
Good morning, everyone. You are listening to Empower Hour on PLV Radio, and I am Coach Brandy. I trust that May is getting off to a great start for everyone. We had Nancy Ogren here last week, and she offered just some of the most amazing guidance on how we can leverage the energies for the month of May to support us on our journey toward a more empowered way of living. Today, specifically, we're going to be speaking to the parents that are listening out there. You know, our children are absolutely crucial to our future. And as a mother myself, I just feel like it's extremely important that we are teaching our children, giving them tools to live a more empowered way of living a more empowered life here. And the other thing that I find is that, you know, oftentimes I have sat back and I would go, you know, I'm here to teach my children. But our children are here to teach us as much as we are here to teach them. And so I have just a beautiful friend with me today from Colorado. She is known as the Parent Whisperer. She believes that the world is a much better place when family life focuses on empowering the parents and the children to be unique, caring beings that we are all meant to be. And she provides simple strategies that allow families to raise happy children children that feel confident in stepping into their unique gifts and talents that they offer the world. So it is with honor that I welcome my sweet friend, Mary Dravis Parrish. Welcome, Mary.
Thank you, Brandy. It's such a pleasure to be here.
Yes, thanks for joining us. You know, I know you have a lot of good stuff to share with us, and so I want to dive right in here. You know, I have heard of the horse whisperer and the dog whisperer and the ghost whisperer, but I've never heard parent whisperer, and I absolutely love it because it's perfect for what you do. But for our listening audience, share with us exactly what that means.
Thank you. Yes, I'd be happy to. So parent whisperer actually came about as I was trying to help, or as I was focusing on helping children, especially with learning issues. And what I would find is as the kids came in to get some assistance with how to improve their learning, how to conquer their beliefs about themselves and what they bought into about their disabilities, what I found was that there needed to be a way for parents to be supported and encouraged through this process as well. And it's not about forcing something different. It's not about creating massive rights or wrongs about things. It's about that gentleness, that simple little strategy that could change and make a huge ripple effect for not only the parent themselves, but for their family and their children. And so I really found that my approach is one of gentleness and softness, although, you know, I don't kid around or I don't mess around when it comes to what do we need to do, but it's with that inner exploration of what will work for you and what do you already have, what do you already know that you just need access to in order to be the parent that your children are asking for. So that's really where the parent whisperer comes from.
I love that. Now, you have a center here in town called Simple Strategies for Family Living. How did that come into being?
Well, as I said, I was teaching special education at a local elementary school for about 18 years, and I was suddenly introduced to some alternative ways of helping kids through some energetic modalities, and I was just blown away by what could happen. So I began to focus my energy and my learning on how can I do this for kids and how can I be something different than what the school system offers. Mm-hmm. And so I began working at Open to Practice called Enhanced Living, where I worked with kids as a practice. And then that just kind of evolved into a tutoring session because I wanted to come back to tutoring. And I found I had some gifts and talents around really narrowing in and identifying those beliefs that were keeping kids stuck. And then, as I mentioned, too, just bringing the parents in. And so it was like we needed a family center that could focus on assisting kids who wanted to improve in their learning, as well as parents who really wanted to sharpen their skills, get in touch with being more of a conscious parent. How do I empower my kids but not lose myself? So I brought it all together, and I just love working with both kids and parents in this family center.
Now, with your experience working with children as a parent, what are some of the common struggles that kids and parents have today?
You know, I think what I'm finding with kids, first of all, is that they don't want to be controlled or manipulated into being like the status quo. They really want to be themselves. They want to shine. They want to be creative. They want to be encouraged, they want to be acknowledged, and they want to be guided, but not controlled. And this isn't necessarily the way parenting has been in the past for kids. It's been pretty much, you know, sit down, be quiet, or fit into this role, or, you know, follow this way of living and your life will be wonderful. And, well, you know, we all know that that doesn't always turn out. And so I think that in the course of what kids are asking for, parents often get confused in how to do that because the old ways don't really address that. You know, there's a lot of focus in the old ways of how to discipline your child rather than how to nurture them or how to bring along how they're different, how to support them, how to allow them to make choices and allow them to learn how to choose things that will work for them. And without that judgment, without that place of not being an allowance of them, and so developing this confidence for both parents and kids that can nurture a family and bring them into more joy and ease and a lot more fun. Mm-hmm.
And what about the parents? Do you find that, I mean, I know that, excuse me, from the time that, you know, I grew up as a child and the parenting style that I was exposed to is quite different than how I choose to parent my children. And I don't have a lot of experience around other parents, but my sense is that the way that we can't mimic what we experienced our own selves as children. And so would you find that do you see that often with parents? I mean, do you find that parents are almost at a loss for how to parent because we can't mimic what we experienced as children and we know there's a different way, but we don't really know what that looks like?
Oh, absolutely. And I know that's been true for my own parenting experience as well as the parents I've been working with. It's almost as if, I was thinking about this the other day, as if parents are victims of their own childhood, and because they're victims of, you know, what they grew up with and not being acknowledged and not being allowed to be who they are and to allow their lights to shine, they're at a loss of how to do that for their own kids. But that's also the beauty, because as these kids come in, they kind of are these mirrors that show parents where they're lacking, but also where they can shine. Mm-hmm. I know from my own experience with my son was that I was spending a lot of time trying to make everybody else happy, but not really searching inside for what would make me happy. And he was able to kind of illuminate that for me and bring me to an awareness of, oh, my job isn't to make other people happy. My job is really to find me as my own source of happiness and radiate that out and allow that to show through of what's possible and just give people, when we live who we authentically are, we just show people that anything is possible and we don't need to put on a front or hide or be something different that you're not.
So when you're dealing with, you know, you're offering simple strategies for people. So what would be an example of a simple strategy that you might offer a parent, let's say,
Yeah, one of the best simple strategies that I really love, and it's there's an art to it, but yet it's really simple, is to be in the question. When we're in control, we need to ask what that's about, why we're trying to control somebody else's life. What is that about? What's that bringing up for me? Where am I having lack of control in my own life that I feel like I need to control my child's life? Mm-hmm. What am I afraid of? What am I not trusting in them? Where am I not able to believe in them to figure this out for themselves, that I'm just here to guide and encourage, but also to be able to trust myself and believe in myself to the point where I don't need to control somebody else? So using questions, and I find with parents, the first thing they want to do is react to something rather than to stop and ask a question. And so often when we jump in and when we react, we're jumping to an assumption about something that is going on. So let me just use this as a brief example. A parent was caught their child in the living room scraping the white paint off their living room wall. Now, most of us would just jump in and say, "My God, why are you destroying the wall? What's wrong with you? What's going on? But can't you see? Now I'm going to have to repaint that." Right? I mean, there's like total reaction because something's being done. But this parent, you know, she used her tool and she stopped and she's like, "No, okay, I'm not going to react. I'm going to ask a question." So she just asked the question. "So, Johnny, what are you doing?" With no judgment, just, you know, matter of factly, "What are you doing?" And he's very simply said, "You know, I'm scraping, I'm getting snow for my spaceship." So, you know, it's like he wasn't like really trying to destroy the wall or anything. It wasn't about, you know, wanting to hurt anything. He just wanted some snow. So then she was able to redirect and say, "Wow, that's really cool that you want snow for your spaceship. You know, I've got some coconut flakes. I wonder if those would work. And then that way we don't have to totally repaint the wall." And, you know, and what a difference it made for the child, because she didn't jump into making him wrong for something that he wanted to be creative about. And yet, you know, she was able to guide him and move him in a direction that, you know, was less destructive. So using those questions instead of jumping into reaction is something that I really encourage parents to focus on.
That is an amazing tip or tool. And, you know, it would take a lot of awareness on the part of the parent to be able to do that. My question for you is, so I love that, and I would love to implement that myself. And so let's just say, you know, my children are 7 and 10, and so they've had 7 years, 10 years of mommy reacting to their craziness like that. Is it too late to change and to shift my own behaviors and reactions, or, you know, at this point, is the damage done?
No. No, and it doesn't matter how old your kids are, even if they're adult kids. So my oldest child was well into his adulthood when I received some of these tools, and even my response to how I interact with him was different, and he noticed the difference, and it was kind of like his mom came to life. He noticed that there was something different, but he also appreciated that I would not jump in and rescue him all the time, but that I would empower him with questions to figure it out himself, and that he would know that I trusted him to be able to do that. And so it doesn't matter what age. We're never, I mean, here we are as adults still trying to look at how we can undo the damage that we felt has been done to us as children, and we're succeeding and we're making a difference. And so it's never too late to change up what you do. And your kids may test you on it to see if it's real, mm-hmm. but they'll get it because they'll sense the energy behind it, that you've let go of your judgments of them. You've come into a place that really truly nurtures them and allows them to feel safe. And if they haven't had that in a long time, they may be untrusting of it until they see that it continues. So just if it doesn't work at first, I would not say give up on it. I would say continue with it because you can sense the energy of what it creates for yourself, because when parents don't react like that, there's a lot less stress for them. There's a lot more vitality. There's a lot more confidence, and the kids will pick up on that. They're energetic beings, and they pick up the energy much quicker than they pick up your words or actions.
Yeah, you're so right. And as you're sitting here talking, I'm thinking about my own experiences with my children when they've done things like that. And if you know, my first reactions would be, why are you doing that? Well, instead of what are you doing, like she posed the question, and she posed it, you said, with no judgment, and they sense that, right? They know that. And so if you come at them with judgment and why, well, what are you thinking? Why are you doing that? I think it can also kind of shift them into this state of shock at times where it's like, I don't know why I'm doing it. I don't know, because I've gotten that a lot. Like, well, why are you doing this? I don't know. So, but I love that she asked, what are you doing? She did it without judgment, which left them in a very safe, energetic space to say what in his mind he was doing at that time. And then she offered an alternative solution. And so she was basically nurturing, his creativity. I mean, that was a very creative thing that he was doing there. And I often wonder now, like, how many times I squashed the creativity just because I flipped out in a reaction.
right. Well, and that's true. And when kids get our reaction, they have basically two choices, because that's all we've taught them. And the first is, I've done something wrong. Mm-hmm. And so I either need to believe that because you're the parent and you know everything, so I must be wrong, or I must be bad, or this isn't any good. Or they go into resistance and reaction of having to prove differently. And then they're in that rebellious mode of, you don't know anything, and this is the way I am. And neither of those work. And so when we teach them that I can be an allowance of you regardless of what your choice was, it's like, well, then I can just come at you with questions of, well, how did that work for you when a kid makes a choice that we probably would not have chosen because of our wisdom or our experience, and yet we know that our kids have to make their choices and discover what works for them or not. And when we can just be there in that supportive role of, well, what would you like to do different? What else could you do without any judgment? Then they know that we're a safe place to come to when they're struggling and they're not sure where to turn.
Right. Now, what is your take on discipline? So let's say a child is continuously making choices that are not within, let's just say, the boundaries that the parents have set. I'm trying to think of an example. I'm trying to think of my own children. I have a son and a daughter, and there's the sibling rivalry. There's a constant, 1 minute they're playing and they're laughing and they're best friends, and then the next minute they're just going at each other's throat. And sometimes that can get out of hand where, they might hit each other. They do things that are just not okay in terms of placing your hands on another person. And so I will send them to their room. And so where's the line where you maybe there's not a line. Maybe you integrate both, but asking the questions of how does that work for you? But yet you still enforce the what is your thought on that?
Well, I think it's important that parents, when we talk about being an allowance, it doesn't mean that you become a doormat. It's that, you know, you honor yourself too. I mean, you are always number, I mean, I think each of us is number one in honoring ourselves. And so when we let our kids know, you know, that doesn't work for me in my house, that, you know, that you guys are constantly at each other. That just doesn't work for me. So I would really appreciate it if you would talk about it. Like, what's going on? Why? What was the reason for hitting your brother? And have them work it out. The less you're involved, the better, because it tells them that you trust them to work it out. And I have seen this happen just recently. We were doing a bars exchange, and one of the mothers brought her two kids to the bars exchange, and they were out in the waiting room playing. And one of the boys started, you could hear him starting to whine and say, oh, you're not giving me my turn. And he came into the mother and she said, well, you know, what else is possible? What else can you do about this? And she gave him a few options, and then he went out, and within 30 seconds, they were fine.
Nice.
He figured
That's
out.
That's a great example of empowering your children to handle their own situations. And it actually, you know, I think they want, like you said, they want that. They want to be empowered. They want to be able to handle these things, but I think they also like to know they have structure and they have support if they need it.
Right.
And that what you're suggesting is not that we completely just leave it in their hands, but that we're placing tools in their hands and we're giving them the opportunity to handle these things.
Right, and when we can teach our kids that they don't have to react to everything that everybody else does, whether it's a sibling or a friend or a teacher, when we show that they don't have to react, that other people just have their ways of doing things and it's not always about us, then we teach them, you know, a more peaceful way of being in this world too, of being an allowance of other people and where they're at, that it isn't always about us, you know.
Now, have you had, I know that bullying in school these days is a big topic and a big issue for a lot of schools. Have you had much experience with the children that come in to work with you having bumped up against that experience in school? And how would you suggest and empower them to handle those type of situations? When we're talking about being an allowance of another child, if this child is bullying you, how would you suggest a child handle that?
Yeah, so, you know, then that is a hot topic. And the first thing that I want to say is whenever we begin to label people as bullies, then right there we're creating a problem, because when you label a child as a bully and they believe it, then they continue the same behavior. So I really, you know, encourage my kids when they're being bullied, the first thing we look at is how much are they being a victim and what have they done to show up as a victim. And so it's really about how can I empower that child to believe in themselves enough to stand up for them that a bully would not even, and I'm not going to use the word bully, I'm going to, or a person who feels they need to control somebody else would not even go to them. So it's really about empowering the child to be more of themselves and honoring them. And so again, it comes back to, it's not that I have to be an allowance of somebody controlling me or abusing me. It's about where am I allowing that to happen and what's going on with me that I put myself out there for that, which is a different role. We often just want to focus on the bully and what, you know, and the wrongness of them. And when we do that, we just lock in more judgment of who they are, that it makes it a lot harder for them to change. But when we don't make it about them and we make it about what can I do different, then it changes things. And there's a program called Buddies to Bullies that I really like, that Dr. Izzy Kalman uses a lot of humor to diffuse bullying. And so that's one step, but it's also stepping into where am I not stepping into my power and my potency and potential that I have as a person that I'm allowing this to happen.
Mm-hmm. Now, what was that resource?
BuddiesToBullies.com, and it's Dr. Izzy Kalman.
Okay.
That's a great, and they have free videos on there that demonstrate how kids can respond to other people who are making fun of them or abusing them.
That's a great, thank you for sharing that resource. Do you find that it's difficult when communicating with, let's say, a 7 or 10 year old child, when they're experiencing this, this other person who's trying to control them, do you find it difficult in communicating with the child that's experiencing this? And when you're asking them, well, how exactly or what exactly are you doing to show up as the victim? I mean, do they in their minds, do they understand that? How do you bring them into the awareness of what they're doing that's contributing to the energetic experience of this? That's a lot for a 7 or 10 year old.
It is. And I wouldn't necessarily use the word victim. It would just have the energy of that as we talk about their power. How do they see themselves? I like to use superpowers with kids and helping them to identify what their superpowers are. I remember one kid just looking at him after we'd been working together and saying, "Do you know how amazing you are?" And he just looked at me like, "No." And I was just like, "Wow." And we just talked about all the different things that he could do. I mean, he brought it up. It's like, well, what are some of the things that you do that might be amazing? And he started telling me. I mean, by the time he left, he walked out knowing he was amazing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, having parents that you can go home to that reinforce how amazing you are is the double side of that, is where the kids really get to then go back to an environment that helps them. But when I work with kids who just, you know, I have to work with them and then they go home and they're still in the same environment that brings them down, it's a lot harder for them.
Yeah. Now, do you typically encourage that the parents work in collaboration with you when you're working with their children so that they can reinforce what you're teaching?
Yes. And so my programs are designed that if I work with a child, then I do at least one coaching session with the parents to kind of identify some key areas where some changes could happen. And then if they're willing and they're open to doing more, then we expand on that.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful, Mary. And I love what you said to the little boy. You ask him, what are some ways that you are amazing? Because I tell my children all the time that I think they're amazing. I think you're amazing. You're just so amazing. But how much more empowering is it for them to, you know, for me to say, do you think you're amazing? Or what do you see about yourself that is amazing? What is amazing about you? And give them that opportunity to vocalize and really kind of create a space, if you will, for them to have that come up within them so that as they speak it comes into their awareness and they really do see why they're amazing, as opposed to mom just telling them. Well, you know, because sometimes we can say it, but maybe they don't really see how they are. And it's more important that they see how they are than to just know that you think they are. Would you agree?
Absolutely, and that's another tool that I teach. We are so trained to give compliments rather than what we call acknowledgments, which are, the difference is when we give a compliment, it's from our point of view, and it can often throw judgment. Like even when we say you're amazing, that's a judgment on our part that you're amazing. I mean, judgments go either way, good or bad, right?
Right.
But when I ask a child, well, what have you done lately that's outstanding? And they can say, well, I got an A on my test, or I scored a soccer goal, or I helped my brother out. Then I can reinforce it with, wow, I can see how that's amazing. And I don't make it about my point of view. I allow them to own it, and that reinforces for them more so. So there's another resource out there that I'd like to share. It's called a book called The Motivation Myth by Jonathan Mansky, where he talks about how to use acknowledgement in this way to where whoever you're working with or relating to, that they get more of a self-acknowledgement of what they've done rather than a compliment, which is ultimately a judgment.
I love that. That is such, those are just amazing tools. I love that. And The Motivation Myth by Jonathan Mansky.
Yes.
Is a book, is that right?
His book, okay. Yes. It's a very easy to use book with lots of samples and different situations, like in the workplace, relationships, family, all kinds of things where you can use acknowledgement instead of compliments.
Wonderful. Now, do you offer, it seems like I saw, and maybe I'm wrong, but do you hold a class or a workshop for children that helps them to create an awareness of their superpowers?
I do. I run a series of Super Kid Powers, Super Kid series, where we, first of all, allow the kids to create a vision board mm-hmm. of what their dreams are. So kids have dreams, too, and they're actually believe they can have them, probably more so than adults do, but allowing them to actually be able to envision what they would like to have, but taking it further, you know, kids can get really caught up in the materialism of our world, like I'd really like to have the latest iPod, or I'd like to have the latest phone, or whatever it is,
right.
And taking it like, well, if you had that, what would that give you? And what is it that would that really mean for you? And allowing kids to get to, oh, well, that would allow me to connect more with my friends. So it's like, oh, so you really want to be able to connect with your friends. And that's what this picture means for you, is to be able to connect with your friends. It's not so much about the item itself, but what it will give you in the end. So I teach them to kind of focus on the end, not so much the means. And then we go from there into what are your superpowers, and identifying what are your abilities and potentials that you can bring to the world. And yes, we're all different. We're not like everybody, thank goodness. Mm-hmm. Identifying other people have been that. And the third part in that series is creating choices that work for you and teaching kids how to tap into their inner knowing of when they are forced with a choice to make how do I make that choice? Mm-hmm. How can I know inside what's best rather than trying to figure it out in our heads? We all know that doesn't work so well.
Now, do you have one of these on your calendar coming up?
You know, I don't right now. There will probably be one coming up this summer for the kids once they're out of school. So I'll be scheduling that. And people can find that on my website, enhancedlivingnow.com. And I'd also like to invite the listeners, if they're interested in those questions, what kind of questions can a parent be asking? There's a free gift on my website for that with a list of questions as well as an audio recording of how to get guilt-free, to be a guilt-free parent.
So I'd love to share that. Yes, what is your website?
So it's www.enhancedlivingnow.com.
So that's
www.enhancedlivingnow.com.
Okay.
Yes.
Very good. So, Mary, what is the one thing that you would like parents to be aware of as they parent their children?
I think I would like for them to see them with different eyes. To see their children as unique beings that are here on their own journey, and that they're not here to be a carbon copy of us. They're not here to necessarily fill up the experiences that we wished we would have had, but they're really here to contribute to the world in their own unique way. And as parents, if we can see that our role is to nurture that and to encourage our kids in that way, which is really difficult in this day and age, especially with our educational system and the way that our society is, our kids need us more than ever in that capacity. They don't need us to control them. They don't need us to tell them, you know, how their life should be. They just need us to help guide them and to coach them along, and to be their supporters when they in the choices that they make, regardless of what the outcomes are. Right. Heaven knows we all still continue to make choices, whether they work or not, in our lives. And how can we teach our children that that's kind of the way life is? We continue to make choices. And how can we best support them in that role? Mm-hmm. So when we can take off the glasses of what, I get the first thing I work with parents when I work with parents is to ask them, so what does parenting mean to you? Why did you become a parent? You know, what were your expectations of that? And how does that really fit with what you're doing? And how is that received by your kids? It's kind of a starting point for where we go from there, because if that's not working, then those are things we need to begin to look at.
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm sitting here thinking, well, why did I have children?
Sometimes they just show up.
Oh, sometimes I don't think we think that all the way through before we do it.
No, and I'm sure if we did, there'd be less children. But
oh, but I sure love them to pieces, I tell you. So let me just get back on track here. That question threw me for a little. I had to go into thinking mode, like, well, why did Oh, but you made a good point about today's educational system, and I mean, that's quite different even from when we grew up. And how can learning be fun in today's educational environment of testing and grading and just all of the constraints that they place upon these children?
Yeah, well, and it can be a real challenge, and it can take some effort, but what it really takes is some different perspectives, and that is, can we quit making it so serious? Mm-hmm. I teach my kids, you know, they come in and they're just so stressed out because of school, and it's like, we just stop making it so serious. And what would it take for you to make it fun? And we practice different things that the kids can do to make what they're doing fun. And some of it's just a matter about balance, like choosing when you're going to do your homework when you get home. Do you get to have some downtime before you jump right into homework? Where can kids have more choice about what they have to do? How they can not take, you know, we all get those teachers that just aren't the most encouraging or nurturing, and that's not a bad thing. It teaches kids that there are people out there with interesting points of view, and when I work with the kids, it's like it's not about you. It's just that this teacher has an interesting way of wanting you to learn, and when you resist and react to her, it can make it harder for you. So we work on different ways and different strategies to let that go. And a lot of it's just, you know, some tools about, you know, what else is possible. Teaching kids to be in the question. What would it take to make this fun? And when they move, that shifts the energy from that serious, heavy burden that they're carrying to something lighter. And when we can, I think when parents can jump in too and say, you know, you're doing the best you can. And that's all I ask. It doesn't matter what that looks like. If it's F's or A's, it doesn't matter. They're doing the best they can, and there will always be a place for them in this world.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, what are the age ranges that you typically work with?
When I'm working with kids, I usually start seeing them when they're in school, so anywhere from 5 on up. I help kids who are in high school who are also preparing for SATs and college testing. So on up, I'll work with adult learners who seem to be struggling and finally would like a different approach to learning. So those are the ages I work with. I will work with younger kids as parents bring up behavior issues for like toddlers and things like that. But normally what I do is I don't work with the kids directly. I work with the parents.
Mm-hmm. Now, what would you say, you know, you brought up an interesting thing about this the seriousness of the educational system, and especially in, I guess I was shocked. This was probably about a year or so ago, and I was working with one of our doctors here in town who practices natural medicine, and she was speaking specifically in regards to the to a specific school. I won't say what that is, but a specific style of learning curriculum, and that this particular style had the highest suicide rate in Fort Collins, and that really brought into my awareness of how much these children, especially in high school, are struggling. They've got, they're feeling all of the pressure and the seriousness and the heaviness. To the point that they're taking their lives, and that is huge. And so when you're talking about how can we make this fun, I feel like the sooner we can start working with our children in this way, especially around school, the better off they're going to be as they enter into high school, where there is quite a bit more pressure and the expectations are maybe greater or higher or whatever. What would you say to that, Mary?
Well, I agree with you. I think that when we put so much stress and pressure on kids on what they have to do with their future, and programs like that are so highly academic and push, that the message we're giving them is this is what you have to do to succeed. Mm-hmm. And is that really true? And so that's another question that I will often ask kids, because kids can sense what's true and what's not true. And is this working for you? And is this really true for you? You know, there are always going to be people out there who are overachievers, who their importance in life is to achieve, to be better, to be better, to be better. And what if you're already perfect the way you are, and whatever effort you're putting forth, is it what you love doing? Because if it's what you love doing, it won't be hard, it won't be serious, it won't be a burden. It will be what you love doing. And programs that don't allow kids to explore and be who they are, but rather just push them to achieve, aren't necessarily the best thing. Now, there are some kids who thrive on that, who do really well with that. But, again, there's this judgment that if I can't do that, then I'm no good or I'm not an achiever. And parents who push kids into those programs, or, you know, it's really getting to the underlying questions of, what does this program give you, and is it working for you? And if it's not, that's okay. It's not a failure that you switch. It's a choice that you get to do something that works for you. That's what's important for the choices that you make, is how well does this work for you, and are you having fun? Right. You know, I learned at the age of 50-something that the purpose of life is to have fun.
Yeah.
And it just kind of blew me away, because it kind of like challenged a lot of beliefs that I had, but yet inside there was like, what if that's true? And the more I was with it and the more I played with it, it was like, well, our world would really be different if more of us believed that the purpose of life is to have fun.
Yeah.
And what that would look like, and how much happier we would all be if we were doing things that we enjoyed doing.
Yeah. Well, I'm not too far behind you. I'm 40, and I'm just now starting to figure that out, Mary.
So, see, it's never too late for us, right?
That's right. That's right. Now, you also assist parents who are grieving the loss of a child. Can you speak to that?
Yeah. I have to say that a lot of what I've learned about parenting really resulted in an event in my life when my 19-year-old son 13 years ago died by suicide. It challenged me to look at my life, who I am, what it means to be a parent, because I totally fell into all the sense of failure of what it means to be a parent when that happened, that it was all my fault, the guilt, the blame, all of that. And coming through that and asking some different questions of what this means for me, where do I go from here, and really beginning to demand something different of my life, showed me that there is a different journey through grief than what this society often tells us. I remember going to a parent support group for grieving parents, and a parent telling me that I would always have a hole in my heart, and that just did not give me the hope I was looking for in this journey. And it didn't feel like it would be what would honor the relationship that I had with my son. So what I found through my grief journey is some different possibilities. They've been challenges at times. I've really wrestled with being able to find joy in the midst of grief. And so I use that to companion with other parents who are struggling and know that something else is possible, that they want to move beyond the grief. They want to honor their children. They want to continue to have a relationship with their son or daughter, even if they're not here physically. So I offer that as a service as well.
Nice. Now, I know that you use a variety of tools to assist families. What are some of those tools and certifications that you have, Mary?
Well, my most favorite are the tools and processes from Access Consciousness. They've created the most change for me, and of course part of that is the Access Bars, which is an energy technique that can reduce stress and change patterns with great ease. I've also become recently certified in BioConnection, which is an energy medicine technique that's used to address specific issues and give the brain a new direction to focus on. I like cutting-edge techniques, things that are simple, like the tools and processes of Access Consciousness. I also am certified in Emotional Freedom Technique and Emotion Code, getting to those emotions that we trap in our body or that we base our lives off of and create change around those places. So they're all different modalities that can show up when I'm working with clients.
Wonderful, wonderful. Now, another question I have for you, and I was, when you were talking about the workshop for the Super Kids series, I thought, wow, how amazing that would be if she offered that by webinar or something where people could take that in remotely somehow. So just food for thought for future. but talk to us a little bit about, you know, do you work remotely with clients, with families?
I do with parents. I don't with kids. I really like to be in the presence of kids so that I can watch and see what's happening as they're doing their learning and so forth. Parents I will work with remotely, so I really enjoy that. Just finished working with a client that was so appreciative. It really became less about the child and more about what she wanted in her life and her personal growth, and it was just a wonderful transformation to watch and see that as she stepped into that, the changes that were happening for her son. So so that's how I work that with parents. I can do it live or remote.
That's nice, because even though they're remote, it sounds like, and you're not working specifically with the child, it sounds like the way that you work with the parents, the children are still benefiting, and you're giving the parent all of the tools to then take back and implement in a way that you might do possibly in session.
Exactly, right. So I pretty much let the parents be the one who apply doing it. It's actually more effective, I think, that way, because they're in the environment and they're, you know, putting it to practice and using it, and they'll see fairly quickly the changes that it will have in their relationship with their kids.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is your take on when you're working with parents, as far as, do you, let me think how to say this, do you encourage that both parents be present in the process, or do you find that you tend to have one show up more present than the other?
That's a good question. It's rare that both parents are in the same place. Like most relationships, there's usually one parent who feels they're doing everything right and one parent who feels they're just totally screwing everybody up. And so working with one parent, again, can be effective, very effective, because as one person changes, everybody around them changes. So I don't require that both parents come in. I often like to get a take on where both parents are at. So it's nice to have an initial interview with both parents if they're willing, but it doesn't mean that they both have to go through the session with me if one's not comfortable or one doesn't seem to feel that they need to. It's not required.
And then what about parents or families who have multiple children? Do you recommend that children, that do you see them individually, or do you see them as a family together? I mean, how do you work that?
You know, I rarely see families all together. If there's a certain child, there's usually one that seems to be bringing things out for everybody, that I will often work with them first and then just kind of individualize it. So there's not a set way that we do this. It's always uniquely designed for each family and how it will work for them. So if there's one child that's really struggling, we might bring them in and do some sessions with them to help clear some energy or to move things through. I can also do some of that remotely through the bioconnection. So if there is a child that's really struggling in some of that, then we can address that. So it's what I love about the work is it's so individual that it's never canned or, you know, we're going to do all these steps first. It's going to meet people exactly where they're at and start, you know, with where they're at and move from there.
I love that. I love that. So much good information today, and the resources that you provided for everyone listening. I'm just so grateful to you for sharing all of that, Mary. So we have about 5 more minutes or so here, and you know, I guess I would just like to. Just one, say something first, and then I want to ask you a question here. But as a parent, I have my I see what the current has very little exposure. I can see how important it is. Children and empowering them and showing them that everything that you do, I'm so grateful for what you're doing, and it's making such a huge difference for so many, I'm sure, because again, I look at some background noise. That's why I keep pausing. I'm sorry, but I see, you know, the role that our children play for our future. And so, what you're doing for them is, and for what you're doing for parents is just such a blessing. And I'm honored to have you in my life and to. Just to have the exposure to you and what you've shared in today's interview, I'm just so grateful because so much good information for our parents out there listening. I hope that you guys will take this and apply this. But just in summary, Mary, you know, what would you, if you could offer some guidance and advice to your listening parents, what would you say to them?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you, Brandy, for making this interview available, because the more we can get out and talk to parents and let them know that there are some other possibilities available, that they don't need to struggle, is important. I don't know that a lot of parents have the time, the energy, the know-it-all to actively search that out until their life is already in chaos. And so I think that's the message I would give is, you know, so many healthcare professionals are about preventative stuff, like let's do things so that they don't get that bad. And it's a lot the same with parenting. If we could start off, you know, from day one with our kids and being an allowance and, you know, not having expectations and not projecting our stuff onto our kids, you know, how much different will family life be? And so I really encourage parents to look and ask inside, you know, is this the best it can be? Does it get any better than this? Is there something else that we can be doing, even if everything seems really grand and glorious? You know, I've been through that, and I've been blindsided. And, you know, heaven forbid, I wouldn't want that for any parent, but it can also be the thing that changes you.
Right.
But really being aware of what your kids are going through, being aware of how you feel as a parent, Do you feel happy? Do you have joy? Do you have energy? Is this, you know, something you're just really feeling good about? You know, there are some parents who have come to me and it's like, I hate being a mom and I can't tell you how bad I feel about that because I have great kids, but I just don't feel good being a mom. And it's like, we need to acknowledge that. We need to know that. Why continue to struggle in a place where you don't feel comfortable? And what can we do to create a life that's fun and joyous and glorious for you? So really asking parents to ask those deep questions, and it doesn't have to take a long time because you'll know right away if you're in the place you want to be or if you're not. And if you're not, that's okay. It doesn't mean you have to leave. It doesn't mean you have to. But there are things that you can do to make it easier for yourself, which will make it easier.
You're very you can tell you have a lot of love and enthusiasm for this work.
I do.
I just adore that about you. And so I have to ask you real quick here, like what is the most rewarding thing for you in doing this type of work?
Well, two things. The first thing is that I get to see kids who begin to believe in themselves and how amazing they are, and that they get to know that they're just wonderful and that they can be in this world and be something that counts. And then when I see parents who step into their own self and become all that they can be, I mean, when they let go of all that childhood stuff that they went through and they emerge in this wonderful, glorious place where they get to move forward and be who they are in their journey, you know, and it's not necessarily always connected to their kids. It's like they go and they be who they are, just like you and I do.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful thing to see because I know that's what's going to change the world, and we need that so much.
Yes, we do. We do. Thank you for saying that. Mary, gosh, thank you so much for being here and sharing so much with us today. I hope that you'll come back and be with us again.
I would love to. It's been such a joy to be here and to talk with the parents and with you, Brandy. You're just a delight to me.
Well, thank you. And just one last time, Mary's website, you guys can get a hold of her at enhancedlivingnow.com. So please do check it out and connect with her. She's such an amazing gift to parents and to children alike. So again, Mary, thank you. And for all of our listeners today, I want to thank you for listening in. I will be back next week with Colin Ruiz, and Colin is a holistic nutritionist, and she'll be talking soul food, foods that literally nurture your soul. So if you miss the airing of any show, you can access all shows at plv-radio.com/empowerhour. And if you would like support on your journey between now and next time, you can visit my website at askcoachbrandy.com to find out more about my programs, offerings, and upcoming events. You are listening to Empower Hour, and I am Coach Brandy. Until next week, from my heart to yours, love.
Thank you for tuning in to PLV Radio. We hope that our programming has inspired you. Please feel free to visit the website to find past shows and schedules. Find your favorite hosts, leave comments about your experience, and share ideas for future shows. Don't forget to visit us on your favorite social media websites, which you will find links to at plv-radio.com. Listen with your friends and share the inspiration.